Welcome to This Is Whole Life, a podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida.
Join me, Ken Wetmore, lead pastor, and Melanie Bachman, our worship pastor, along with our communication team, Randy and Lucas. Take a look back, a look deeper, and a peek into the week ahead.
Here we explore meaningful conversations about spirituality, community, and living with purpose.
We don't have all the answers, but we are walking the journey together.
Wherever you're listening from, you're wanted here.
This is Whole Life.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 515 of This Is Whole Life. I'm going to say it, but you guys are doing a great job. Our conversation only lacks you, but we went three out of four again this week. So the hat trick is in. It's your questions, it's your comments that is the only thing that can possibly be lacking from such an amazing show with amazing people every week. And that sounds self-congratulatory, and it was, because I think it's appropriate. That's my paper. Sorry. Anyway, getting back to it. This week, we have a ton of fun stuff, including, if you guys missed it last week, I have to start here. I'm sorry. We'll get to everything in just a second, but Ken's grandma, in the service, online in the chat,
people, is she trending?
People that there is a petition out there somewhere that thinks that your grandma should be the official grandma of the Whole Life Church.
Done.
Okay, but that was easy. Do we have a quorum, right? Or do we need? We don't need one.
Do we ask her? Does she have any say in this?
She has no say.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool.
I don't think she gets a say.
She doesn't know.
No. So we're gonna come up on that in just a moment because the voicemail from this week speaks to this more, and that is awesome. So if you guys have something to add, as always, 407-965-1607 for voicemail or text or podcast at wholelife.church, or if you are one of our Slack channel people, please do use that, as we have had some already. We have one of those today as well. So everyone is here this week. Melanie Bachman across the table, Ken over my shoulder to my right as I move and swivel, and the only person missing is Lucas.
So I guess that means not everyone is here.
So not everyone is here because
we're minus one.
Dear Lucas, please come home.
I think next week we actually will have a full house here.
Wow.
Is everybody here?
Yeah.
I thought you were gone next week.
No, I'm here next week.
You're here next week, but then after. Okay, right. Gotcha. Well, being that we're all here, let's get started off. We had an email said, I appreciate the connection between Earth Day and graduation. Growing up SDA, I often felt that we were doing many of the negatives. Ken, in your sermon, you mentioned that we are a church without creeds. Can you expound on the danger of creeds? How do we recognize a creed, even a subtle one? What advice do you have for us as we move forward as a church?
Opal.
Yeah.
Thanks, Opal. Great question. I think that one of the things I love about the early Seventh-day Adventist church is they were just willing to put all their beliefs out there and have really lively discussions. Some might even call them arguments over things that were really important and that we would really say today are very foundational to Christianity, but they're willing to put it all out there and say, hey, let's just really explore it. Let's look at it. So the danger of creeds is that you lock yourself into a set of beliefs that doesn't give the latitude for people to actually be able to study the Bible further, because you basically say, this is what we believe. And if you don't believe it, you don't belong. And if you don't belong, what's the point of actually saying, well, is that really true? Because if you do decide it's not true, then you don't belong anymore. Or if you have questions about it. I think the bigger problem is not so much for me that I'm confident enough in my beliefs that I just don't have a problem with people questioning them. And the thing about it is that we should be able to have a conversation. And I'm trying to remember, there was a great quote from, I think it was one of our founders whose name was, I think it was Loughborough, but I can't remember for sure. But he does this whole, if you go here, then this happens. If you do that, then that happens. And he's talking about creeds. And he basically says that creeds are the beginning of religious tyranny, is basically his argument, that it stifles conversations. So what do we do? How do we handle that here at Whole Life? Well, one of the ways is that we try to be very open to allowing people to ask questions, thoughtful questions. That doesn't mean we don't have things that we believe, that we stand for. But what it does mean is that we give people the latitude to be able to investigate and think, and that when we come across people who disagree with us, we engage in conversation rather than casting them out.
I think we have to be really intentional about that too, because it's really, really easy for a movement to become, to harden into a religion or a doctrine, or even creeds, even unspoken or unwritten creeds. And honestly, it's pragmatic, because when you have a large organization, you know, you've got to have some kind of way to hold it intact. And so sometimes the way that you do that is to establish creeds. But I think as long as we're continually intentional about making sure that we have space to ask questions and that we enjoy the richness of that discussion, I think that that helps us from hardening into just a regular religious organization.
Enjoying the richness.
Right.
That's actually a good idea. I mean, if you have fun doing it and you can, like Ken said, I'm confident enough in what I believe that I don't have a problem with somebody else saying, not sure if I believe it. But then the other part too, maybe to go a little bit further, is things that are really, really like embedded, those are tough to pry loose sometimes. But sometimes someone else's idea is profound enough, or, wow, that actually makes sense. Like, I have no rational reason other than just my own preference and what I have been keeping inside myself for me to think that that's not maybe at least a viable idea, maybe even a good idea. Yeah. You know, and that can be fun if you let it be.
You know, one of the churches I pastored, I had a fairly well-known Baptist theologian that attended church there. He had a family that were a part of our church, and so he would come to our church. And I think that one of the most enjoyable things that happened with him was we would regularly have conversations about what he agreed with and what he disagreed with in the sermons. And he would share his perspective on what I preached about and where he thought I wasn't getting it right. And it wasn't in a, oh, you're a bad person, you're horrible. It was in a, how interesting that you see it that way. Hmm. I see it this way, and this is why I see it that way. How would you respond to that? And it really felt like it was genuinely he wanted to understand why I saw it that way. And I remember that he wrote a very detailed paper refuting the Adventist position on what happens to a person when they die. And he didn't like hide that. He actually came to me and said, hey, would you review what I've written and tell me why you think I'm wrong? And it was really fun. And we had
you knew you were gonna.
Oh yeah. It was. I shared where I thought he misrepresented some of our what we thought. And he was like, oh, I really appreciate that. I appreciate you sharing why this isn't exactly the way. And thank you for that information. It was a very pleasant conversation. I don't know that either one of us really shifted our beliefs, but what I do know is I understood his much better, and I know he understood mine much better as well, that we were like, okay, so that's where you're coming from. And we often think that people – I used to encounter this when I would be teaching Bible courses in Christian schools where kids have been raised Christian their entire life, and I would often get people who believe in evolution are just stupid. How could you believe that something could come out of nothing? And one of the conversations that I thought was really important to have with them is, no, these are not stupid people. These are very smart people, and they have very smart reasons for thinking what they think. Now, I'm not one of them. I believe in creation. I believe I take that position. But I think we do our kids a disservice when we teach them that people are stupid who don't agree with them, and that they don't have some very logical. There are arguments that evolutionists make that Christians can't answer, that there's evidence that there's just not a good answer for. Mm-hmm. Now, my argument is that there's things within the Bible and within Christianity that evolutionists can't answer, that that there's things that the evolution, the theory of evolution does not answer. So the question is, which one do you find to be the more compelling thing? And that's where you can have some really rich conversations, but you don't do children a favor by hiding those things from them and never telling, because what happens is then they show up someday in a high school biology or chemistry class and they are shocked when they start seeing all the evidence on the other side that they've never been exposed to, and it feels like to them that it's been hidden from them. It feels like, oh, you were scared to share that because you were afraid that if I knew this, that I would believe something else. And sometimes they're not wrong.
Well,
I think that sometimes people do that. But the thing is that if you're confident in what you believe and that it's there, you can start sharing this. And there's age appropriate times to share things, but it's very important for us that we share not just straw man arguments with people, but actually here is the problem with my argument on this. This is where the evidence doesn't really fall in line neatly for what I think. But here's why for me it's still the most compelling argument for me.
Yeah. No, that's good.
And I think the dialogue part is important, because even when people have discussions, sometimes it's more like mutual monologue instead of actual dialogue. I think relationship is really important to that. And the relationship actually helps us keep from turning other people into caricatures. And that's what I experienced, you know, when I was growing up. You know, I was always told, oh, people, if they would just read the Bible, it's very, very clear. Yeah, this is right here. You know, if they would just crack open the book. And then when I, you know, was able to study with some people in an ecumenical environment where there are a lot of people of different faith traditions, and they explained why they believed what they believed, I thought, oh, okay, it's not because they've never cracked open the book. They've read the book very, very carefully, and this is how they came to the conclusion that they came to. And it made me respect other people a lot more, not necessarily that I agreed with everything that they had to say or that they had to agree with me in the end, but it did create a situation where there was a lot more mutual respect.
And it didn't somehow preclude you from being saved, or like, oh, you could be driven down the wrong path if we tell them this, because this could create doubt. This could create a whole nother animal that we don't know how to control.
Well, now you're bringing up my religious childhood trauma, Randy.
Well, and we're doing this one too.
You need to slow down, Randy. We don't have enough money in our funds to be doing workers' benefits here. So they...
Well, I think that from Slack, we had Nate write in this week and said, I grew up in a fear-baiting, shame-driven flavor of Adventism. What I keep discovering is how easy the shaming, the judgmental evaluation of others based on a randomly selected list of rules, can so easily return to my thoughts. Thankfully, most of the time I keep it as a thought and avoid verbalizing it. Good for you, Nate. That some of us don't have that ability as so easy as others. So thank you for whatever you're doing to make that happen. What are some ways to reframe the shaming thoughts to loving words to others, and most importantly, good one here, myself? Man.
Oh, I feel like I need to call my counselor to come in and spend some time here so we could talk about this a little bit further. I really resonate with what you wrote, Nate, because that's the kind of religion I grew up with too. And like you, I can very much relate to having those thoughts creeping into my mind and starting to feel that, you know, the shame and all that sort of thing that isn't the right motivator. And I think part of it for me, and I don't know, this is for me, part of that journey has just been to recognize it and be able to label it and say, oh, this is where it's coming from. This isn't what I really believe. This is what was programmed early on. And I want to say, just in case my family's listening, everybody was doing the best they could. There's no, sure. There's my kids are going to be having to undo some programming that I put into them. I'm more than confident about. So this is not a shame statement for the church I grew up in, the people that I grew up around. It's just it was what it was, and we're all on a journey of growth. And so for me, I think that one of the things that the other side of things that we have to watch out for is that if you're not using shame, you still need to be talking about consequences. You still need to be talking about why God asks us to do things and why that God cares about us enough to put things out there for us. And so it's a delicate thing, line to walk.
If it were just cognitive, it would be a lot easier. Yeah. But unfortunately, when it's so formational to our identity, and when it creeps into our emotions and how we engage the world, and then we develop this formative religious default where, you know, you may cognitively say, no, I don't believe in a God like that anymore, but your emotional default, you know, can still, you can still be triggered to your emotional default. So, I think it's a long process of unlearning, and you don't just unlearn cognitively, you have to unlearn, you know, emotionally and psychologically and spiritually, and it's a long process, and I don't know that there's ever a hallelujah, I'm free from, you know, from everything. But yeah. I do think that God is with us in the process.
And I think that it's also people speaking into you that see something different in you, that see what you're striving to be, that can walk alongside and say, oh, man, I'm really impressed with, you know, the way you handled that situation. Or you made a comment about something and it that really resonated with me. So finding someone else or being around people that are uplifting and accepting and providing that grace, that see something in you that the old part of you, that reframing that doesn't happen, that default that clicks in and goes, ah, yeah, you're still the same person you've always been. Ah, don't, it's okay. You're not moving anywhere. You're just here with the rest of us. But it's really helpful when you have someone and you have those encounters. So it's also something maybe to think about as you're listening to someone else who you may recognize as being maybe dropped back into the default or maybe stuck in the default for a little bit, to give a positive and uplifting where you can.
That's why it's so important to me. I've had so many people come and sit in my office in tears because of something that they're really, really wrestling with. And I know what that feels like. I know what that feeling is. And I know how painful it is to try to unravel that. But it's such an important process.
Yeah. Don't forgo the process for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got it. We've taken care of an email. We've taken care of a Slack. And now it's time for a voicemail. I love this voicemail very, very much, by the way. So here we go.
Hey, Randy. This is Carolina Day. Just a big howdy to you and the rest of the podcast staff. And I just want to call in and say I really appreciate the message from this last Sabbath. I will tell you this, though. I'm trying to get some notes from it, and I feel like a cow chewing the cud because, you know, I've listened to that sermon twice already. I'm still taking notes. Real good sermon, a lot of stuff to soak in. So, but it was also great for the service to see Ken's grandma, and she's a trip. She is a trip. And the fact that she said that Ken's about as crazy as she is, oh, that explains a lot of things. That explains a lot. And that's really cool. Y'all need to have her more of her endurance service. But speaking of grandparents, you and Ken were discussing last week about what his future grandkids could call him. And the title I heard was Grandpa Ken. Now, Randy, as we all know, this isn't just Ken. I think Grandpa Kenny is a much better fit.
Okay.
Even Papa Kenny, or Grampy even. I mean, the options are limitless. But Grandpa Ken is just, well, it's just not crazy enough. Needs to have a little bit of a ring to it. So Grandpa Ken. That's my vote, or Papa Kenny, or just plain old Grampy. But anyway, y'all have a great week, and I'm looking forward to this next Sabbath, to the message that's about to come. Y'all take care.
That's awesome.
Grandpa Kenny. Papa Kenny. I'm like, well, his name may not be wrong. I mean, well, Grandpa Kenny, that sounds
The good news, Carolina Davis, we've hopefully got a lot of time to iron this out and make a final decision, but your vote has been placed on hold until we get to a point where now Melanie just got back.
Say.
Yeah, Melanie just got back. So what's Grandma Melanie? What are we?
So I really wanted to be granny.
Okay.
Yeah.
But my mom's a granny, and my kids were like, there cannot be two grannies.
No.
I'm like, well, can she graduate to great granny? It wasn't happening. So
can she be double G, great granny?
Great granny. You know, yeah. She probably would be down with that.
Yeah.
Get the tattoo and everything. But
yeah, I can see that.
We settled on Mimi, just, you know.
Oh, okay.
Well,
yeah. Because there are other grandparents in the picture. And so there's already a grandma, which actually her other grandkids call her Jamma. So I think it might end up being Jamma for this little one too. But yeah, Mimi's what we went with.
Mimi. Mm-hmm. Mimi. All right.
Well.
Mimi. It kind of works. Mimi Melanie?
Yep.
Mimi Melanie.
You beat me too.
Well, I didn't know I was going to be serenaded.
Well,
you're welcome.
You know, it just shows you how much we missed you while
exactly.
you were gone.
Oh,
we would serenade you when you get back.
Randy and I barely had anything to say last week.
We speaking of which.
Uh-oh. What did we do?
I'll just say this. You know, I did a lot of early morning shifts with the baby. I think my shift started at 3 a.m. And so I listened to a podcast to help myself get to sleep, but I usually set a timer.
What better podcast than This Is Whole Life to put you to sleep?
Well, it's just Randy. So
no, Ken, that is not the one I chose.
Uh-oh.
That is the one that happened to end up in the playlist, unbeknown to me. So I'm dead asleep.
So what were you listening to when you fell asleep?
Just a soothing true crime podcast.
Oh,
like
yeah. That's good stuff.
I'm dead asleep, and then I hear Ken's voice say, Melanie, if you're listening to this, why are you listening to this? And I woke up out of a dead sleep. Like, where am I? What is going on?
I'm home already? What's going on?
It's nightmares.
So, yes.
So taking your boss on vacation?
Apparently. Can't get away.
Yeah.
That is wild.
You're not supposed to be listening to work while you're gone, so you had it coming.
Not even in my subconscious, apparently.
No, apparently that is awesome.
Melanie, is Ken. Do not be working while you are on vacation.
But I will say that I got permission to post a picture of Sophie in our Slack channel for a podcast listener. So
nice.
I'm going to get to show you the little face that I had to leave.
Are you going to be in the picture with her?
It's cuter if I'm not in the picture with her.
All right.
So I thought we're going with that.
I gotta.
I don't know. There's just something special about seeing, you know, Mimi.
Yeah.
Holding, you know, the green baby.
But 97.5% of the pictures of Mimi holding a baby are in a bathrobe, strung out with no sleep, and feeling a little.
Yeah. Although I thought the one you sent me Saturday morning. A week ago, saying that you
Sophie
guys
and
were
I
up.
Are praying for you.
before I had to speak twice, and I thought that was a great picture. Yeah. I mean, you look tired, but I mean, that's...
All right, well, maybe we'll do one of each. Just we'll show the bathrobe one first, and then we'll show the actual cute baby one second.
So here you guys go. Not on our Slack channel, you'll want to get on there now. This is
Mimi Melanie making her debut with Sophie.
Yep.
Sophie. What's Sophie's middle name?
Her middle name is Lynn, after my mom.
Not
only does she get Granny, but she also gets Lynn.
Man.
I just feel like, you know, Mimi's all that was left.
What's your middle name?
Michelle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right, Granny, I think we're going to have a talk here because, I mean, how much do you need? Right?
No. She definitely earned it. Yeah,
okay.
There's no hard feelings here. I'm very happy that she has the name Lynn because it's very cute.
Next time she's here, if we have to sit down over coffee and work this out, then we will. I'm here for you. So, well, this week, after all of that, it was too cute, though, starting the message. I mean, with Ken's grandma, there were just the room, he started off and he was like, I think he just wanted to win right out of the gate, get everyone smiling and on his side before he went into the message, because right then he could have asked for anything. And I think they'd have like, can we get a little bit more granny? And then we will do whatever you ask us to do, because it was.
Is she a redhead, Ken? Or was she a redhead?
No.
Okay.
My grandpa was.
Gotcha.
But she
grandpa
was not.
Was.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know what level of crazy we were talking about here.
Yeah, well, I am going to refrain from answering that one and just say that both my grandfathers had red hair, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Really? So you really, that, well. I don't know. I don't believe the whole it comes from your mom's side or whatever. I don't know.
You know, the interesting thing is that there have been several articles that have come out in my news feed in the last 2 weeks that say that redheads are taking over the world. Have you seen that? That
really?
The redhead gene is a dominant gene? And
I haven't, but I think maybe your algorithm has figured out what you want to hear.
You know, I don't disagree with you. Oh. That may be true, and yet it wasn't on an algorithm-based thing. This was on a news site that I...
She went with algorithm.
Hey, I am still a little sleep-deprived, so...
Wow.
Maybe I should have...
She's really coming
little,
for me today, isn't she? She's
a little...
She's less
a
vacation
slack.
For you, Melanie. Less vacation for you.
Right to the algorithm. That was good. So what about redheaded lefties? What about
there's
that?
There's not a lot of us out there.
Maybe. But maybe it's coming back. Either anyone else in your family left? Or are you it?
As far as I know, the only other person that is like direct from me, I have uncles and aunts who are okay. Uncles.
But like not I brother think, and...
Not my parents. Neither one of my grandparents, as far as I know. And the only... potential one was a great grandmother who we were told she wrote with her right hand, but when she was in elementary school, they forced her to learn how to write with her right hand instead. She was naturally trying with her left.
Oh, wow.
Man. Talk.
So I don't know. Yeah. I know. So many years ago, I was in getting an eye exam, and the doctor doing the eye exam said, you have a red splotch, red freckle in your iris. And then this person went on to tell me that had I been alive in the dark ages, that would have been something like it would have got me burnt at the stake. And then they looked at me and go, but you also have red hair, so that would have not been good for you. And also being left-handed is also not good because the name for left-handers I don't know if it's Latin means sinister. So,
oh, wow.
So, yeah. So there's lots of strikes against
you'd
me.
You'd have been extra crispy.
Yeah. I wouldn't have made it very long.
Well, so. We're glad you were born when you were.
Oh,
yeah,
me too.
No, for sure.
Me too.
It's funny. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that my wife says I look like a hobo with my glasses, right?
What?
Because they,
why?
Well, there's no, like, two people after I got done preaching, like, they kept looking at me, like, at my eyes. And I was like, what's going on? Like, your glasses, like, it's all chipping, like, the stuff on your glasses, and they're all scratched up. And so, you guys, for those of you that brought it up, I want you to know that I went and got my eyes checked out, and I'm going to go get new glasses this week.
Nice.
So, very soon you'll see me with the non-hobo.
Is the whole team coming along to help you pick frames?
No, I do my own.
Oh, okay.
And I was sadly mistaken the last time. I've had these for 3 or 4 years, and I hate them. But when they went for the appointment, he grabbed my glasses, and he puts them on the machine, and he's like, how can you see out of these? He's like, these are horrible. He's like, how long have they been this way? And I'm like, well, about a year.
Get ready for a whole new world, Randy.
And he's like, do you have insurance? I'm like, well, yeah. And he's like, and? I don't know.
It is one of your benefits.
I don't have a good excuse. It's just here I am. I did it all by myself, so leave me alone.
Good job.
Yeah. How about that? So this week, Ken got the duty of trying to figure out how to make Earth Day and graduation work together.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know.
That's a tall order, really.
It really was, because I was thinking to myself as I was preparing my message a week earlier, I'm like, man, I kind of know what I'm talking about because it's me. So that's easy. Yeah. Like, you can't really screw that up. Even if you get lost, you'll figure your way.
Great job, by the way, Randy.
Oh, it was really good. Yeah.
But I'm like, how are you going to put these two together? And I don't know how many little packets of seeds that we had available.
I think
for
we
everybody.
Had 500.
Man, like, everyone was excited about the seeds. Like, they were like, can I have more than one?
That's awesome.
Like, second service, they're like, well, there's more in the, you know, in the thing there. Can I? Yeah, go ahead. Have some more. So, yeah, I think that was a big hit.
Good.
And then the word cult came up in the message this week. And I'm like, ooh, Ken was trying to keep everyone from extremes. And as far as to have to mention that, you know, if you find yourself in a around the fireplace outside, dark night, full moon, crazy people howling. You might be in a cult. That's what I was kind of
expecting. Or you might be on the whole life staff.
Playing mafia.
Also a cult.
No, but when you started into the message and you were like, I got 12 things I want to talk to you about, like things and why, and you can disagree. And then weren't we going to do someplace where we're going to put up all those verses?
Well, we had talked about taking the slides from the presentation and putting them on the webpage. So
on the webpage,
our communications team had talked about that potentially.
I can do that. Well, we'll talk about that afterwards. Don't let me forget though.
It's just the 12 slides.
Yeah, because I mean, Carolina Dave clearly is still taking notes. So this would probably be.
You could have saved him a little time. So.
And I did see people taking pictures. So for those that may not have gotten all your pictures, we'll figure it out. But check the webpage. We'll figure out where we can get those to you guys. And if you miss it, check on the newsletter because I'll make sure it makes it a link for it in the newsletter just in case you missed his notes. What's going to help me grow spiritually, or is it going to be detrimental to my spiritual growth? And the things that you listed, like nothing was super surprising except some of the explanations where some of the angles you took, I really found but I hadn't thought about it that way before. And, you know, a couple of them was, is it God or is it self-centered? Ouch. Is it encouraging me to grow and how? And is it spiritually healthy or spiritually toxic? Is it based on love or shame? And does it make me more compassionate or judgmental? And this one, I really thought, does it encourage you to ask more questions or does it shut down questions? And when you went with Q&A after the service, there was like, I was online, they had panned to, I don't remember if it was first or second, but they were kind of in an outshot in some people's heads, like going up and down, like, oh, yeah, Q&A. Yeah, that's a good one. And I think that, you know, even, and it reminded me just the week prior when Stanley asked me two questions. He showed me one of them beforehand, but he didn't tell me that's the one he was going to ask, and he didn't ask that one. He asked something completely different, and it's a little unnerving to be sitting there going, okay, I just delivered a message, and now there's going to be questions, and I don't know what kind of questions, but I think the part that really – even the tough questions, you never shy away from them when it comes to Q&A. And I think people respect you for answering, honestly, like even if they disagree, then if they feel like you're giving them an answer, like you're going to say, well, I'm going to give you the pat answer, or I'm just going to avoid you altogether. Or then, okay, we'll do it on the podcast. And I just saw people shaking their heads about that. And I was like, you know, out of all the things that we do, that's I don't see like any other church is really doing a Q&A after the message. It's been so good for the podcast. And I think it's been good for people that don't always feel comfortable asking a question or maybe wouldn't go and like, I don't know if I can go up to Ken and ask that because that seems forward or whatever. But giving everyone a chance to ask a question, and you know, you can log in as anonymous if you want to and ask the question. But I really thought that was something that every week takes guts, because I realized the week prior how much that I was not nervous, but that I was apprehensive about it. And especially after you finish, and I've never had to preach two before. So the first time you get done and you're like, ooh, I made it. Like nothing, you know, I went over a little bit, but you know, Melanie's not here. And Nate was super supportive and was like, sorry, we screwed up the timer. We'll do better for second. And we had our little powwow afterwards and it was all good. We were good. And then when the second time comes, you're like, oh man, what are they? And it was a tougher question the second time around. And I'm like, so I just wanted to say kudos to anyone, especially Ken, who gets to look forward to this like every week. And I don't know how you do it. I mean, I guess you've been doing it a long time, so maybe that makes it easier. But do you still feel like, man, there's a lot of weight? It feels a little weighty.
Yeah.
You have to preach twice, And it's hard. I don't know. My first and second were totally, not totally different, but they were different enough. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, okay, so which one was one better than another? Did I think differently? Did I feel differently? Was the Holy Spirit moving differently? And then you have the questions and that's a lot. How do you do it every week?
There's a extreme fitness, I go work out and,
is it Jim Melanie for mental gymnastics and things you must do to complete a message?
No,
well, he does get a preview of Q&A on Fridays.
That's actually quite true.
Oh, I did think of it that way. Okay.
I do get a little bit of a preview when I preach my sermon to Melanie, and trust me, I'd probably rather do the Q&A with the church than the one with Melanie. How do I do it? I don't know. I mean, it's like just about anything else in life. If it's what you're used to doing or expected to do. I've been preaching since I was 16 years old. So, and I think one of the things that people who haven't done a lot of public speaking or haven't done preaching probably don't understand about preaching is that it's a very physical activity. It's not there's the emotional side of it, but there's also just a physical aspect that you'll feel very, very physically depleted at the end of preaching. And a lot of people that I know that only have to preach once on a Saturday will feel very, very tired afterwards. And the second time is definitely there are pastors who preach more than sometimes preach three and four times in a Sabbath. I've done that before. I think the most I ever preached in a Sabbath was I think I did 5 30-minute plus sermons, and I did a Q&A at the end of the Sabbath. And that was kind of a fun one. I was youth director for the Kentucky-Tennessee Conference at the time, and I was doing a week of prayer in a town or at an Adventist school. And usually what I do is just call one of the local Adventist churches and see if they wanted me to preach the Sabbath after the week of prayer. As long as if you're 6 hours away from home, might as well, do that. So one of the Spanish-speaking churches had asked me to preach. And so on Friday, I saw the pastor and said, "Hey, still on to preach at your church, right?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, we can't wait. we're looking for, we need you to preach on the book of Daniel. And we want you to focus in on
book of Daniel."
Yeah, on the book of Daniel. He was very specific, and there's some specific things he wanted me to focus on.
So you didn't get
to
use your material from the week.
Oh no. And so, and then he said, "And we're going to have you do two talks before church, one during church, one after potluck, and then there'll be a Q&A at the end of that one to close off the Sabbath." And I said, "So a 5-part on the book of Daniel." And he was like, "Yeah." Keep in mind, this is Friday afternoon.
I think I had this nightmare once.
And that was the last time Ken ever agreed to preach at a church.
No. I'm not going to lie. I loved the challenge of it. For me is I'd preached a series on the book of Daniel at the previous church that I'd pastored. So I went and found my archives really quick.
Nice.
Used a lot of the material from that, modified it a little bit, and had a real nice time at their church. It was a nice church service.
So you left with a good memory.
Yeah. It was a fun one. It's like, I don't know. It's like, if you run a marathon or you,
I can do it
for pastors. Sometimes there's like, that's like one of those, like, I just did an ultra marathon.
Makes two services seem like a little sprint.
Yeah. And the other thing was like, when I was out at the Upper Columbia Academy and Cheney churches, I would preach one service at one of the churches. And then we had a morning service at Upper Columbia Academy. And then the Cheney church was a 30-minute drive away from the UCA church. So I'd drive over to the Cheney church and preach there. And we tried to kind of keep the sermons the same, but occasionally we'd do different sermons. So you'd have two different sermons. That's the one that I find to be really challenging when you're preaching different sermons on the same.
Wow.
So if you preach one sermon for one service and second, because for me, when I'm preparing, they're in my head. And so if I have to have two sermons, I feel like I have to kind of compartmentalize and put one sermon in one part and the other in the other, and they start kind of melding together at some point if you're in. So anyway,
No. Then I would definitely not be able to look up at anyone and just keep your face right in the notes. Otherwise, I would be off.
But for me, one of the important things about preaching is getting good sleep the night before. And then I actually have a very specific way, a routine that I go through. I don't eat breakfast. For me, I've just discovered, and I feel like I preach better on an empty stomach. So I don't eat. I'll have water and that's about it, but no food until after I'm done with second service. And I really try to avoid, if I can, a heavy meal on Friday night. I try to do something that's not quite as heavy. And then, like I said, go to bed at a reasonable hour and get up at a maybe less reasonable hour, but make sure I've got 7 or 8 hours of sleep. And that's when I know I'm going to feel my best going into it. But depending on the topic, there are weeks when I'm not as comfortable with the topic that I'll feel very on edge about what's going to get asked about it, because there's really good questions and I don't know that I always have a good answer to a really fair question about that topic.
Man, empty stomach. How about you, Melanie?
Oh, what about
if you're preaching?
Oh no, yeah, I don't eat.
I didn't either.
No,
I didn't feel.
I think it's there's more mental clarity, I think.
Yeah.
For me, when I don't eat, now I think it adds to the exhaustion afterward.
Yeah.
And I think, and here's a tip. If you want Ken to be slightly less exhausted at the end of his sermons, the more energetic the congregation is, the less energy you as a speaker have to project. So if you want to help Ken out a little bit,
yeah. Well, that's one of the things I've loved about preaching about Whole Life is that they're both services have good energy, but for sure, the style of preacher that I am definitely feeds off of the energy that's and that's why for me, I don't know how it is for you, Melanie, but I'd rather the larger the group, the happier I am.
Oh yeah.
I don't mind. It's not because like I'm too good to preach to only a few people, but when you're only preaching to a few people, it feels very, when there's five people in the room, and I've done this before, I've preached a full sermon to 5 to 7 people in a room, and it feels, it's like, well, could we not just maybe have a conversation about this?
Can we all sit down?
I don't need to be up here, right? I could move down to the front row with you guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's true though. The feedback is definitely something that makes it easier when you see people like they're moving their head with you. They're feeding off of you. They're pausing, they're listening. And that does make it easier for sure.
It also changes the sermon a little bit, you know, because there's a book by a homiletic scholar named Marianne Garden, and she wrote a book called The Third Room of Preaching. And this is another thing why I think the Q&A is so interesting, because there's the sermon that the preacher preaches. There's the sermon that the individual congregation hears, and somewhere in the middle there's this meld, this third room of preaching where it's almost like the preacher and the congregation have collaborated in the ideas. But if you don't have the opportunity to hear what the congregation is thinking, then you never really get to visit that third room. So I think the Q&A is great for that.
It never ceases to amaze me as a preacher how often you'll preach this sermon, you're very clear in your own mind about what your point was, and somebody come up to you and say, wow, Ken, that was exactly what I needed to hear. And you're like, fantastic. And they're like, I needed to hear, and it's completely different. And you're like, what? Wait, were you tuned into another church during? I mean, was that Matt Smith? Was it Doug Hart? Who are you? I mean, Brian Castle, who are you listening to right now? Because that wasn't the sermon I thought I preached. But that's to me part of what I think is the beauty of coming to church, is I think that God does have a message that he has each person come to hear. And I think that there's sometimes where people hear something that wasn't necessarily in the sermon, but it's what God needed them to hear. And so they hear it.
Something you said triggers something that they have in their subconscious or whatever it is. Yeah, that's crazy. So all of these different things, the what was happening in the chat overall, we did have one question, which we will get to, but I mean, all these questions were things that you kind of have to answer for yourself. Like, how do I feel? And that's going to look a little bit different. Like, what does, you know, what does growth look like to you on your spiritual journey? And that could depend where you are. Is it healthy or is it toxic? Well, most of us know what toxic is, but I don't think I always know what healthy is. I think I might know, but I don't.
I'm not sure if all of us know what toxic is. Because it's like being a frog in a frying pan, right? If it heats up around you, you don't realize how hot it is. And I mean, if you jumped into it, then you'd be like, whoa, this is, but it's interesting. I think even people that grow up in dysfunctional families, it's normal. That is the normal.
That's
so
true.
So understanding that that is not actually the normal is an awakening.
Many of us have said, I'll never do that to my kids. And you find yourself doing that to your kids. And it's your normal. Mm-hmm. It's what you're used to. So I think that's, I really hope that came across really clear. These are questions that I would ask myself, but you should have your own questions that you use to evaluate. And maybe some of them will be things that you use, and maybe there's some things that I didn't include that you would include. But you should have an evaluation that you do. And how do you know whether it's healthy or toxic? For me, the bottom line, the easiest thing for me is to go to 1 Corinthians 13 and say, when I look at this list of attributes of love, are those the things that I see growing in my life after being exposed to this? Or do I see those things wilting and dying in my life? That's for me, the Bible says, by their fruit, you will know them. And so the question is, what's the fruit that's being produced in your life? If it's more, if you're becoming kinder, if you're becoming more patient, if you're becoming more tolerant of people who aren't like you, these are all attributes that 1 Corinthians 13 says make up love, that are what God is like. And so if that's what's happening in your life, then if you're seeing it growing, then you're in a growing place. If you're watching those things wilt and die, then you're in a toxic place, and it's something to think about.
Ken, you mentioned that, one of the points that you made was something to the effect of, does it make you more compassionate or judgmental? And I was really pondering that afterward, because I think often our judgmentalism wears the clothing or the costume of compassion, because we feel like, oh, well, I have compassion for this person and I want them to be, saved or whatever. And so that is why I am, calling them out or being critical of them. And so it really isn't compassion, but you've put on this costume of compassion. So I think it's worth kind of peering into ourselves to look and see if sort of that insidious gray area of judgmentalism is actually, trying to pass itself off as compassion.
Well, and that was the thing that, as I was sitting down and listening to this for a second time, really stopping to think, like, each of these is something that you have to sit down, and I think it's a great list, and certainly if you have others on your own list. But I think that what Ken gave us is definitely something that we can get started on. And maybe the one that I focused on or resonated, and this was probably because the topic of my sermon earlier 2 weeks ago, does it produce freedom or control? And Ken said, Jesus said that he came to give us freedom. So is that what you're experiencing, or are you finding that you're being controlled? And, you said, let's not forget that God gave Adam and Eve the opportunity to make mistakes, and they did. And it cost God dearly that they did. But it doesn't say that God washed his hands, turned his back, and never spoke to them or never loved them again. Because this is the one that it seems like if you get this one wrong, it's really hard to have any kind of sway left with somebody if it's really just, well, you're not really allowed to make mistakes. You don't have freedom to question. You don't have freedom to listen to God and get it wrong, get it right, find out what that looks like. But again, you also have to think, what is God telling me about what's right with my walk and where I could use help? And then, does it make you feel like holiness is only achievable if you separate yourself from the world and the people in it? And that one was another one that just really, I know that I grew up with that again, but the thing that made me think about that one a little bit deeper was, it's almost like there's a spiritual fence that we put up about, who, what, where, what's appropriate for this situation or what's appropriate for what I believe. And it just brought me back to when Emily was born, and we had a lot of friends, acquaintances, other church members where we used to be at church, and who at first would literally just like pull their children away from Emily. like, you know that the extra chromosome can't just like jump onto your child and create what you see and go, sure, I'm glad that's not me, right? And I'm like, I get that part too. I do. But just by proximity, and it's like, man, if that's that whole thing about if we're not all welcomed here, like how can you expect anyone to find some degree of freedom or safety when it's like, oh, well, let's not get too close because that's probably catchy. And I felt like those two were just ones that, I mean, all of these, you kind of have to go through and just kind of decide what, you know, what you're feeling and where God's leading you. Those two were the big ones for me. Do you feel like you have to be separate from everybody else? And do you have the freedom to just make mistakes and be on your journey, but also have someone walk alongside of you? And I hope that's what you're finding in Whole Life, is that you're finding the latter, that you are finding someone that is, or a family that's allowing you that freedom and really has your best spiritual interest at heart, even if, you know, we get it wrong on occasion and have to say we're sorry or, you know, but still, we still like to continue to walk with you, even though we made a mistake, and let's continue on. And that was I really liked the way that Ken framed those, because it wasn't ones that I wouldn't have thought about those in this context. And are you better because of what you're taking in? Oh man, you know, if you come to Whole Life and you think, man, I'm a different person than I was before I got here, or I'm just my walk is better. I've learned, I've grown, I've learned and spiritually, and I love Jesus more. And again, I hope that's what people are finding as they come to Whole Life. And for the most part, I feel like that's the truth.
Well, I think I said it, I don't know, in one of the services, no place is ever going to fulfill all those things.
Yeah.
Like there, nobody does that perfectly. And as much as we want to find the perfect place, there probably isn't a perfect place. But there are some places that definitely are going to help you more as you're striving to grow, and others that are going to kill that growth and make you a less helpful part of this world. So,
yeah.
So those are all things to think about. We don't want to be overly judgmental of people who are trying their best and doing what they can. We also, I've also found that if you're aware that there's something that's not good, it's easier for you to go ahead and separate that part out and say, okay, this part, I'm going to just be aware that this is happening. So I'm going to I'm going to balance it out with something else or whatever.
Got it. Yeah. Well, again, we will put those slides up in a place that are accessible. We will put those in the newsletter. And if you do not currently subscribe, I would encourage you to do so. That's a good way to keep up on everything that's happening every week. And it's an easy place. A lot of times people say, I saw that 60-ish with Ken somewhere, but I don't know where it was. And it's like, well, that's on YouTube. But it's also the second link in the newsletter every single week will take you to Ken 60-ish and what's going on. And it's always from someplace interesting. This week it was with Granny from Virginia. So, you know, you never know where or who Ken might be talking to on 60-ish. So you don't want to miss
that. You never know when I might show up at your door, knock on the door and make you do 60-ish with me.
So don't answer the door unless you're, you know, fully dressed and camera ready.
So watch therefore and pray.
For ye know not the hour.
The time of the hour.
Of your visitation.
Oh my, that's good. So we had one question, and since Lucas isn't here, I will go ahead and take it. And this was from James, who had asked a question, and then he followed it up. So I'm going to do the follow-up just because I think it helps set everything else up. He said, I really appreciate Ken's approach here. Very biblical, solid, grace, love-filled counsel in this message. Many of us were given very different standards of evaluation, or at least implied, which likely is behind said spiritual PTSD. Just my thoughts. And his question was, I feel like a lot of people are walking around wounded. Shame-based growth, control, fear of questioning. How can such people find freedom from this, and how can we help them?
By using our list exclusively, and then
don't
you'll
ask
be
any
fine.
Questions.
And we'd like to make it into a creed.
It is a creed.
Everyone
we will have you sign a paper next week.
And immediately the studio started on fire.
So in all seriousness, it's a really good question. And the short answer, ask it one more time.
Shame-based growth, control, fear of questioning. How can such people find freedom from this, and how can we help them?
In all seriousness, create an evaluation tool for yourself and just ask yourself, is the place that I'm going creating more shame in me? And let's differentiate that between the fact that I need to grow. That's different. But are they... And so find places that that are using the things that we're talking about in this list, that you're talking where they're not trying to control you, where they are giving you lots of resources as you're trying to put yourself in those situations and make your own evaluation tool for what those places look like. That would be it.
So what does it look like as someone here at Whole Life, whether you're an in-person attender or whether you're online, that you part of our online family that tunes in every week, and you have friends, you have someone you see, coworker, and, you know, like the people that he mentioned earlier, a lot of people are the walking wounded and that spiritual PTSD. What do we do?
I see people doing all the time, Randy. People invite people to come with them. If you've found a safe place, invite your friend to that safe place. Mm-hmm. And we'd like to think Whole Life is one of those places. Invite your friends to come. That if they are suffering and they're going through, if they're walking wounded, invite them to get out of the situation that they're in.
That they're in, yeah.
And find a place of safety and where they can grow spiritually.
And continue to walk with them, because I think sometimes when we haven't had freedom and we get freedom, it's like grace. You know, when you have not had a grace-filled life and someone extends grace to you, you're almost suspicious of it.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we can be suspicious of the idea that maybe God's got us and God is doing the work that needs to be done. We make ourselves available and we keep showing up and let God do what God is doing. It's really, really hard to be like, but I must do all the things and I must figure out the things and I must never think like this or do. It's hard to let that go. It's the unlearning part that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
I think we still have to, walk with people while they're unlearning the things that have been really traumatic to them, and so that they can then start embracing the things that are positive and healthy.
And that's the other part, Melanie, that when you're working with people who are in abusive situations, one of the things you have to understand is it can be really clear to you, but it's not really necessarily always clear to them. And so I think sometimes people get frustrated when they're working with somebody who they see in a clearly abusive place, whether that's spiritually abusive or physically abusive in a relationship or whatever. And people get frustrated and they'll just kind of wander away from that person because, like, well, you don't want help. So if you don't want help, then I don't want to be around this. But I think one of the most courageous things you can do is when you see somebody who is being hurt, who's being abused, and who refuses to receive help and to get away from it, to not let go of them, but to stay in relationship with them so that when they are at a place where they're ready and they're looking, you're there for them and available to help them when they're ready to make the choice for themselves. But I think all too often we wander away from those kind of people because generally they're hurting, so they're lashing out and you're like, but I had the answer, and you're not willing to listen. Well, it just takes time. If any of you have been through difficult things in your life, you just know it takes a while.
Yeah.
Number one, to recognize it. Then when you recognize it, you're scared that I'm worried I'm going to jump out of the fire into the frying pan. I don't know. I mean, where do I go? Everything that I thought was normal is not what I thought it was. And now where do I go? And how do I know that this is a safe place and just not another place that's trying to use and abuse me? And so you have to be really patient in these situations and not expect people. They're not stupid. They're not caring. They're not wanting change in their life. They just don't know what that looks like, and it's scary.
Yeah. Well, and I had two people come up to me, one after each service, that said, just thanked me for the podcast. Like, how, you know, we spend the time and we do the podcast every week. And I can tell you that the original reason behind the podcast was for this very reason. It's an easy jumping point for someone who may have been hurt, damaged, the walking wounded, as James said. But inviting them to the podcast, which is an easy, hey, I listen to this podcast. I find it, you know, mildly entertaining. They do talk about they do talk about church stuff, and they do talk about the message. But, you know, there's a little humor. There's a little, there's some Bible. There's Jesus. But I feel like it's one of those things where we talk pretty frank, and we let our voices and our feelings be heard in an honest and open way. And I think it's an easy way to, or an easier way maybe sometimes, for friends that you know will never, ever step foot back in a church ever again. They've been damaged to that point. But they may be willing to watch online, and they may be willing to do something that isn't technically church. And so that was something I didn't have time to. I wanted to include in my message, but I'd already gone over both services. So I just was like, nah, better stay away, because then I'll really be long and we'll be way off course. But so I would say share the podcast too. And especially when there's over 500 episodes, and sure, you know, if there's a topic that you find that could be meaningful, you can share a series. There's super easy. And if you don't know how to do that, just send me a text or an email, the podcast at wholelife.church, and you tell me what you're looking for. I'll find it in those, and we can send them even a whole series all in one little link that they can just enjoy and use for them. So do that. This week is not Ken. Melanie. It's not Randy.
Nope.
Who could it be?
This weekend is our service is going to be hosted by our young adults. So we're going to have a young adult speaker.
She's amazing.
Is going to speak. I've already
nice.
Talked to her about her sermon and read what she's going to talk about. And I think it's going to be really, speaking of honest and authentic and not being afraid to ask the big questions, she's going to talk about the story of Hannah. So I think it's going to be a really, really interesting approach.
Nahimi. Yeah. Well, that'll be interesting. I don't think I've seen her since we did the Kind Tweets from God series.
She's been here. Where have you been, Randy?
She's here all the time.
I see her sometimes, but I haven't actually talked to her. Well, that'll be good.
Yeah.
You're not going to want to miss that for sure. And then back after that, we haven't done like a series in what seems to be.
Yeah, we're going to get into the Don't Forget series.
The Don't Forget, that's right. Yeah. That's coming up after that. Okay. Well, cool beans.
And that's followed also by our summer series. And thank you to Aaron, who sent me another topic for the summer series. Ooh. I appreciate that, Aaron.
Nice.
I have it, and we will make that happen. And we only need 10 more. So the summer series is called Our Favorite Things.
That's right.
And so the general idea behind this one is you get to pick what I preach on, but rather than asking me a question about something you want have a question about, you send me your favorite Bible verse, or you send me your favorite Bible story. And when I say Bible verse or Bible verses, you send those to me and just tell me why it's meaningful to you, and then we will preach a sermon on it.
Cool.
Yeah. And so
Ken@wholelife.church.
That's it. Ken@wholelife.church. And I have two out of the whole summer, so we have a ways to go.
More. And it's not ken@wholelifechurch.com.
No.
Wholelife.church.
No.
Yes.
I had two people in the same week. My email keeps getting bounced back from Ken. What am I doing wrong? And I'm like, oh, there we go. Yeah. Here, click this link and it'll go. I promise it'll go where it needs to go. So anyway, hey, and those slides, by the way, I will also put those in the Slack channel. So for anyone, we had a bunch of people come in and join the Slack channel over the last couple of weeks. Just email podcast@wholelife.church with the email, or I should say from the email that you'd like to subscribe to, and I will add it, and then you will be in the know. And usually about Tuesday or Wednesday about midnight, you'll see me in there typing and posting pictures, and things that I'm telling you right now are going to be there will be there. And so there you go. You'll be the first Adam. You won't have to wait for the newsletter. So there you go. All right, guys, I guess that's it. Young adults next week, and then don't forget series after that. And I don't, is there anything else coming up? Are we
all kinds of good stuff? We can't even talk about whole all life the good things that are coming events. Up.
There it is.
There you go. Thanks for listening, guys. Have a great week. Thanks for listening to This Is Whole Life. If today's conversation resonated with you, we invite you to subscribe, share, and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. To join the conversation, send a text or voicemail to 407-965-1607 or email podcast@wholelife.church. To learn more about Whole Life Church, worship with us online or in person, visit our website, wholelife.church. Until next time, this is Whole Life.